Today on Job Talk, balancing work and fun, how to be taken seriously when you're a fun-loving guy, and how intensity in a caring environment can create an atmosphere for growth. All that today, right here on Job Talk.
Hi, welcome to Job Talk. My name is Dave Forrest.
And I'm Doug Meinert.
Each week, we have the opportunity to speak with people of various careers and interesting lifestyles. Today, it's no different. Doug, who do we have the opportunity to speak with today?
We're talking with Dave Scott, who is professor of trumpet at McNeese State University in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Hey, Dave.
Hello. Yeah.
We have a lot of fun doing this. We lean toward music and the arts and theme parks and theater. In education, that's kind of our sweet spot for talking to people. But what I wanted to talk to you about today is, you know, your studio and specifically kids that you see today, you know, how it's changed over the 20 years or so you've done it. And I also want you to talk a little bit about, you know, the great adventure that music's taken you on. I remember you as a barefoot young lad from Kentucky who came in with such a bright, shiny attitude about why we were studying our horns. You know, trumpet players have a reputation, among other musicians, for being a little, I don't know what the word is.
Right.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
Unique.
Yeah. And, you know, what I always found refreshing, and you were really an inspiration to a lot of people at DePauw, because you came in with the approach that that it should be fun, and that it was about the music, and the music that we'd make together instead of about, you know, being the best at this and the best at that. I mean, be the best you can be, sure, but not because you were going to be better than somebody else. And it really made a difference when you came into that studio because we started to have fun again. And as my dad used to say, who, as you know, is a brass player, he said, play the horn like you like it.
Yes.
You know, don't be trying to prove something all the time. So talk to us a little bit, because you had some interesting jobs immediately out of school. I just want you to kind of walk us through that journey in your bare Kentucky feet, and then let's talk about your studio a little bit.
Okay, well, at DePauw, I came to DePauw, I was first chair in Kentucky All-State Orchestra and in band for 3 years. You know, everything was great, and I went around to all the schools and auditioned, and they all, well, that's great, we're going to give you scholarships. And I got to DePauw, and the trumpet teacher there, he said, well, I don't know if 4 years is enough to bring out your potential, but we'll try. So I got nervous and thought I should probably go there. So when I got there, I'm all that. And I got there and realized that no one cared. And I just tried to conform my first year, and it just wasn't working. And so I just said, my personality is my personality. I like to have fun. I like to enjoy life. I like to just live every day. And it worked out wonderfully, except when I got to my junior year. We had a concerto competition, and I played, I thought, very well, and I didn't win, and I thought, okay, well, that's the way it goes, until the next day, and three or four of the faculty came in and were just furious because they had me first place, and I didn't understand it, and so I went and again talked to the teacher, and he says, well, Dave, you know, everybody thinks of you as a good-natured person, have fun, you throw good parties. And they have a real hard time making the difference between that and when you put the mouthpiece on your face. Hmm. And I said, so that's the world that I'm going to live in. And I said, okay, what's the hardest concerto written for the trumpet? And he told me it was the Jolivet at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I played that and I won. Uh-huh. And I've since known that about myself. And when I went to Seattle and gigged, I would have fun and I'd play. And I knew I would always have to work my way in. And even when I got hired here at the University of McNeese, you know, they had a great trumpet player teacher, Mike Ewald, who I replaced. He went to Illinois. Mm-hmm. And they all, you know, the little, well, that's good. You know, Mike was a great player, you know, and you'd hear these things. So my first recital, I played the hardest recital I could possibly play.
Right.
And then that talk went away. But I've always known that about mm-hmm. myself, mm-hmm. and I've accepted it. You either accept it or I don't become as good a player.
Right. Well, you know what? That couple of things you said that piqued my interest, and we talk about this a lot, and as you know, the benefits of studying music, whether you go on in life as a musician or not, is that it helps you find yourself sometimes.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
And it gives you something to celebrate and something to be a part of. And it's so interesting that at the college level and professionally, you had to find a way to stay true to yourself at the same time, say, hey, I'm up here and I'm all business. You know, this is
right.
The respect I have for the horn and for the fact that you people have come to listen to me and how you've balanced that. That's a lesson for everybody in business. You know, in the park business, we had circumstances where you really had to pay attention to safety or numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a business. And at the same time, you had to preserve that attitude of having fun. It's a fun business, right? How you conduct yourself, Dave's a behaviorist. I'm sure he may have some comments on this. How people look at you and how they respond to you is driven by, as he always says, just a few things. What you do and what you don't do, and what you say and what you don't say. Or in the case of your horn, what you play and what you don't play.
Yeah.
Even at Cedar Point.
Yes.
where we had our glory days. And this is after I had played and I was helping you out as some sort of a supervisor. You guys left me alone with the hobo band and kind of really almost forgot about me. Mm-hmm. And then it was like a day or so before we were open and they were like, Dave, we need to see this. And so we went and did a show. And I'll never forget, because the very beginning of the show, we just stand and play for about 30 seconds. And somebody, March Cornwell, would come up and go, are you guys going to do any choreography? And I said, just wait for it. And then the rest of the time, it was just insane.
Yes. I remember that show.
You know, but our space ballet and the whole nine yards. Yeah. You know, and the thing is I took it very seriously. And we went and we worked that thing hard. But once again, I knew that until I proved it, You never doubted it a minute, because we've known each other.
I've got something from the opposite direction that's intriguing, that the two of you are talking about obtaining credibility by your behavior. You know, you're known as a lighthearted individual having fun, and therefore you're not going to be the best musician.
Right.
I have the opposite experience. When I was in high school, I sang in a chorus, and I was in all-state chorus, mm-hmm. and we were in rehearsals. And the kid that was the accompanist was a freshman, and this kid was unbelievable at the piano. But very, very serious, extremely serious.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the conductor's talking to us. All of a sudden, he says something to the accompanist. I need you to do this, da-da-da. So he does it. Well, about the third rehearsal, he turns to this kid, and he says, William, could you just play like Mary Had a Little Lamb? And this kid broke into Mary Had a Little Lamb on the piano, and it sounded like an orchestra. And all of a sudden, we all recognize this kid was also just a kid.
Yeah.
Because prior to that, he was so impeccably perfect. He was like a machine. And no one would talk to him.
Yeah.
And suddenly his personality came out, because he played something lighthearted in a very extremely technical, precise way. But then we got to know who he was. So it was just the opposite situation.
Interesting. You know, something else you said, Dave, that's interesting to me is it's easy to take for granted the way somebody sounds on an instrument. And people who don't go into it for a living and study as hard as we do don't understand that it's craft.
It is.
You know, you have a certain level of talent, and then it's craft to learn how to do things. And in my case, my journey was to the age of 33. I finally learned how to arrange anything I could hear in my head, I could put on paper. But you said that the teacher at DePauw, he said to you that he wasn't sure that 4 years was enough to bring out your potential. Well, that's a fabulous statement, because what I'm interested in is your journey after that first 4 years. When did you really feel like you'd arrived as a player?
I went to Tanglewood, and I just wanted to put myself out there with the best players. And the first month, all I did was study with Mr. Roger Voisin, who was one of my idols in the Boston Symphony. And I've never done it since, but I practiced 6-7 hours a day. And then the second part was with the Empire Brass Quintet, and they put me in the top quintet, and all of a sudden I had fun with musicians. I went to concerts, and I mean, everything was there. And I got back to DePauw, and the directors were so amazed by my difference. I didn't really know I had a difference.
Mm-hmm.
They had noticed it was just a complete change.
There you go.
It was just this summer where I had an intense situation,
mm-hmm.
which I've tried to make all my students in high school. I ran a trumpet competition for 13 years,
mm-hmm.
and I tried to have an intense situation for high school. Mm-hmm. I make my studio very intense,
mm-hmm.
in a loving situation.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The reason being that intensity in a positive environment lets you know it's okay to excel.
Yeah.
And at a point, I thought, well, I'm good enough for DePauw.
Mm-hmm.
And I coasted.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of students do that in colleges. And with my group Pastiche that travels around the country and I give clinics, I see that at some of the best schools in the country.
Yeah.
And they're great players.
Mm-hmm.
But to find an inner intensity is hard nowadays.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, my observation, I've auditioned and hired over 10,000 musicians and performers.
Oh, yeah.
Was that the kids who had raw talent and could coast, they were okay. The kids who had a modest amount of talent and worked hard, yeah, they were okay too. They could catch up. but it was the kid who had the gift and then worked really, really, really hard.
Really hard.
Yeah. And they found, and you see the people who had the gift, but they just didn't have the passion for it. So that's why I'm really interested in your journey to that point where you knew you could play music. Dave, talk about your studio, the kids that you're proud of and the kids that come through and what you see every day in a young person who comes through your trumpet studio.
I teach at a regional college in Southwest Louisiana. There are many kids that I get that nobody in their family historically has been to college. Mm-hmm. And they're encouraged to quit because they can go into the oil field. And I think these kids are amazing. I think the amount of disparaging remarks against the youth of today and it's not as good, I don't understand it because these kids are amazing, especially knowing that for a lot of these kids, for them to succeed, they have to distance themselves from their family. I've had parents who, in a joint checking account, will empty their checking account so the kid cannot afford to pay for college and have to drop out. You know, I've had that kind of thing. I've had parents that call two or three times a day just trying to get the kid to come back home. And for those kids to succeed, it's amazing to me. Now, the great trumpet, I always have great trumpets. Speaking of Blast, I just had a student that just finished a five-month Japanese tour with Blast.
That's great.
I think they're doing the music for Disney, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had great lead trumpet players. Ray Charles' last lead trumpet player for the 8 years, his last 8 years he toured was one of my students. And if I can get them to overcome what I call I teach at a school called McNeese State University, and I call it the McNeese flaw, where the word just, you know, well, it's just McNeese. It's just Lake Charles. It's just Louisiana. If I can get rid of that stupid word, the students can blossom and fly, but I do push them very hard.
Can you share with us some of the accolades that you have? You know, you talk about the kids that come through, and it's an uphill climb to the bottom for some of these kids.
Right.
Just give us an anecdotal story, if you will, of one of the successes of the kids and how they have come out of that and become a better person. Of what you've done using music as a tool to accomplish that?
Okay. There's a young man. He happened to go to this spectacular high school in Texas, Northwest Houston, top high school in the entire state. They're phenomenal. And he made the decision to come to McNeese. And his dad was on total disability, and his mom had to work two jobs. And during his first year here, his dad passed away. Well, he was just going to drop out of college. Well, we worked with financial aid. I went over and made appeals on his behalf, and he really meant a lot to him, and he worked hard and hard. But on the same hand, his brother, who was also a talented musician, came and very lazy and didn't do much. So here you have a brother that you're having to take care of, your mom, who in his senior year started to get everything repossessed. And she lost her job and whatnot. So I come back from a summer recess after he graduated, and he was going on full scholarship to North Texas. You know, the trumpet teacher there said he'd probably be first chair in everything that he wanted to be in, sleeping on people's couches because he almost could not escape in the end the reality of the environment he was raised when he was not at McNeese. When he was at McNeese, he was going to class and being a successful student and a successful player. And so I made some calls because I knew the quality of this young man. He marched in one of the drum corps and was the feature soloist for the Cavaliers. So anyway, he's been successful, and now he's moved to Houston. And he sent me a video of a little brass quintet that on their own decided to play for a solo and ensemble competition. And they were practicing on their own, and one kid was being a metronome, just clapping his hands. And he says, "I finally get it. This is what it's about."
That's great.
For me,
super.
I mean, it's like he's broken through and finally understood.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a great story to tell. And as we said, we appreciate the fact that you used music as an instrument, no pun intended, to help people find success in their lives in ways they might not have thought of in advance.
That pun was absolutely intended, and you know it.
It was forte.
Hey, Scott, it has been so great to hear these stories and to catch up with you. We're going to call you back in a couple of months and see what else is going on in your world of music. But keep doing what you're doing. Keep fighting the good fight for all those kids. And most especially, thank you for the gift you've given all of us to remind us to take each day as it comes, find some fun, be serious when you need to, and live life to the fullest.
Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for spending time with us today. We hope to hear from you next week.
Yeah, in the meantime, leave us a note on the blog and or send us a note at dave@jobtalkradio.org or doug@jobtalkradio.org.
Dave takes the good notes, Doug takes the bad notes.
I take the high road, Dave takes the low road.
It's a journey. It's a four-wheel drive journey. Hey, thanks again for being with us on jobtalkradio.org. We hope that you'll go to our website, leave a note, post a blog, send us an email. jobtalkradio.org.
That's jobtalkradio.org.